Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. It has been over 4 years since Malaysian Airlines plane MH370 disappeared, and the search has now been called off. We still don't truly know what happened, but there's an investigator who thinks he does know what happened. Larry Vance, according to a website where he can buy his book, has spent a lifetime in aviation. His background as a training pilot, flight test examiner, and civil aviation inspector led to a career as a professional accident investigator. He was investigator in charge for over 200 field investigations, including the Swissair 111 crash investigation, for which he received a Government of Canada certification of recognition. He continues to work on high-profile investigations worldwide. He has a book out called MH370 Mystery Solved. He joins us on the phone right now. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much for jumping on the phone. During the news, I was just watching the Australian 60 Minutes that you were on. It's fascinating because we've done tons of interviews over the years on this flight and this plane. And everybody that I've talked to up until now has pretty much concluded that they think there was a fire on board. They think there was a loss of pressurization. That's the only thing that seems to explain why this plane flew on and on for 6 hours till it ran out of fuel and landed in the sea. But you say that is not what happened.
No, sir, that is not what happened. And there's lots of proof to show that that's not what happened. And that's why I wrote the book, to put that all that physical evidence into the mix and to show people that the evidence is there.
All right, so let's talk about what physical evidence there is. There was some wreckage found a couple of years ago, right? Tell me about what wreckage was found, and are we 100% sure it is from that flight?
Yes, sir, we are, and that's confirmed by the official investigation. And airplane pieces like the ones that are found, or the important ones anyway, have serial numbers and so on, or identification numbers on them. So they trace them back to MH370. There's absolutely no doubt they came from that airplane. There's about 20 pieces that are from MH370 that are pretty much confirmed, and then there's another half a dozen or so small pieces that probably came from that airplane. But the two main ones that we have to deal with are from the flap system on the trailing edge of the right wing, and they came off during the ditching event when the airplane entered the water. One's called the flaperon. I'm sure some of your listeners will have heard of the flaperon.
Sure.
Came from the back of the wing. And there's a section of flap that was next to it that also broke off. And those two pieces floated, well, all the pieces floated to the coast of Africa, but those are the two main ones that were recovered. And there's physical evidence on those two pieces that tell us what happened. And I can explain that to you if you want me to go into some detail.
I absolutely do, because the other people dispute Martin Dolan, former head of the Australian Transport Safety Bureau, told the same 60 Minutes that there's not enough evidence. He said, quote, "The evidence is not yet sufficient to draw as firm a conclusion as you appear to have done." And he added that it was just speculation that the flaps were down.
Yeah, I spoke with Martin when we were down there taping that show. The 60 Minutes show, of course, was we had, 40 minutes of television time. We did a full day on that, 6 hours of taping, and they took certain parts of it to put on the television. But when we were taping that show, Mr. Dolan had not read my book. That was one of the drawbacks that we had for that. He was not aware of all the evidence that was in the book. He's since read it. I haven't talked to him since, but I think he might have been enlightened a little bit. But no, the physical evidence is there. And how you get physical evidence from two pieces like that is that you compare one to the other in the sections between them where they crashed together, where they were forced together during the impact. And you can take those physical marks, we call them witness marks, and you can line them up. And when you line them up, you discover that the flaps were extended. I should explain that the big revelation in all of this comes from the fact that the evidence that me and my team put together showed that the flaps were extended, and what that means is that a pilot had to have done that the flaps cannot get extended on that airplane unless the pilot does it. And the pilot would do that at the end of the flight, which, of course, means that the pilot was controlling things at the end of the flight. And if the pilot was controlling things, then all of those suggestions by others that the pilot was somehow disabled and that the airplane was flying on its own on autopilot and ran out of fuel, that takes that all out of play. That didn't happen. The other big thing that we can tell from those pieces is that the airplane, in fact, entered the water at a low speed. It entered the water at a low speed with the wings level. In other words, it was set up for a controlled ditching event. The pilot put the flaps down, controlled the airplane down to the surface of the water, and then put it onto the surface of the water as delicately, if you will, as he possibly could in those circumstances, so as to make it land and stay in one piece. His intention was to have nothing come off the airplane. Nothing would float to the coast of Africa or anywhere else. So the airplane would disappear, never to be seen again. That was his intention. It took me 18 months to write a book to explain all this, but that is what the outcome is. That's it in a nutshell.
Well, Larry, but that's got to be pure speculation, though, right? That was his...
No.
Well, okay, so tell me how you know that was his intention. To land the plane and have it disappear and parts not come off to be found.
Right. Now you have to go back to the very beginning of the flight. You have to go back to the fact that he took off. He flew for about 30 minutes. He took the airplane up to cruising altitude. He said to air traffic control, those famous words, good night, Malaysian Air 370 or whatever he said. And then within 2 minutes of that time, the airplane disappeared from radar. The airplane completely disappeared from radar. That can only happen if there's a catastrophic event on board the airplane or the pilot turned the transponder off. We know there was no catastrophic event aboard the airplane because the airplane flew for another 6 or 7 hours and then was landed gently on the surface of ditched on the surface of the ocean. So we know there was no catastrophic event. We know that he wasn't disabled. We know that he did it because he put the flaps down. Now, he intentionally made the airplane disappear by turning off the transponder, which is easy to do. You turn one switch, poof, off it goes. And now you make the airplane disappear from electronic radar tracking. And then he turned the airplane violently, aggressively, I guess you could say, back toward Malaysia and up and flew the airplane on a route that was between air traffic control sectors, between Vietnam and Malaysian airspace. He did that intentionally. That has to be done intentionally. Even the official investigation, which was just released, said that can only be done by somebody who was flying the airplane intentionally. It wasn't done by autopilot. It couldn't have been done. They figured it out aerodynamically. That it had to have been controlled by somebody doing it in the cockpit. The only person who can fly the airplane is the pilot. So now he flies for the better part of an hour on a route that took him up to a place where he avoided all the radars that were available that might have tracked him on what we call primary radar, the old military kind of radar they used back in the Second World War, where there's a signal sent out and it reflects off the airplane and comes back and it has a ghosty kind of a reflection. They don't see that on modern radars for air traffic control. They found that afterwards and were able to track that's what he did. And then he turned the airplane southbound and flew way down over the South China Sea or the Southern Indian Ocean. That's where he ditched it. So all of those things, and he also disabled other systems on the airplane. He disabled the what they call ACARS, which is an automatic connection between the airplane and some ground stations for exchanging information automatically. All those things were intentional acts, and when you put them all together, you say this is the intention. Somebody intended to do that. They couldn't do that by accident, and it didn't happen because of some external force or some mechanical issue. It happened because somebody did it. Well, who could do it? The only person who could really do it would be the pilot. You know, the other speculation, of course, is that it could be somebody who hijacked the airplane, but there's good, reasonable analysis to say that that didn't happen either.
Okay, let's go back to, because you're very definitive on all of these things, and there could have been, so the theories early on and the books that were written earlier on, and maybe the answer is all of this information wasn't available to those people. I don't know, you have to tell me. But if there was a catastrophic event, if there was a fire, things like that, I've been told in the past that the way that plane is set up, where the communication systems are and things in front, that those things could get knocked out by a fire below the cockpit. Is that not a possibility?
Yeah, the fire could knock them out, that's for sure. But then what happens to the fire? Like that, people have said, well, the fire goes out. No, I've done accidents with fires. Fires don't go out. Fires continue to spread. Fires spread exponentially. And all the research that we did back when we did Swissair 111, that was an airplane that went on fire and killed a lot of people. Airplanes crash well within 20 minutes of a fire breaking out on board. The other thing, of course, is if there was a fire which disabled the electronics and so on in the airplane, it would have also disabled all the feeds to the autopilot. The autopilot wouldn't have worked. The airplane couldn't have flown for 6 or 7 hours after a fire like that that knocked everything out. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And not only the fact that you can't fly with a fire on board for that amount of time. The other thing, of course, the big thing is that how in the world would you fly with a fire that disabled the airplane disabled the electronics and disabled the pilot, and then have the pilot do a ditching on the ocean with the flaps extended? That can't happen. Doesn't make any sense. When you say all this information wasn't available to others, I can tell you that it was available to the others. But I can tell you also that they didn't find it. The evidence was there. If you go into my book, you'll see photographs of definitive physical evidence, witness marks, that I have worked with for years and years and years. I've been doing this an awfully long time. And my partners, a couple of my partners, have been doing it even longer than me. It's very definitive and very easy to see. I get feedback from people all the time from all over the world, from people who have looked at this evidence and say, wow, this evidence has never been shown before except in this book. And that's the truth.
It's
not magic. It's not something that you know, just appeared magically to me in a dream somewhere. This is not that hard to do. I have written that and said in the media before that I'm pretty disappointed that other people who are professional investigators didn't come up with this along with me. It surprises me.
Larry, let me ask you. So the evidence that really set you over on this is that the flaps being down on the pieces that were found. That, to you, said that means a pilot was in control when this plane broke apart or when this plane crashed. That means a pilot did that. Or because if the flaps had been down earlier in this flight somehow, it wouldn't have flown on for as long as it did, correct? That would have been impossible.
Boy, that's an excellent summary by you. You just hit it spot on. Okay. No, if we didn't have these pieces that came to the shores of Africa, then I wouldn't be able to say any of this. I wouldn't just go speculating based on no evidence at all.
But so let me ask you then, is there in any way a possibility that those flaps are in that position because of the plane breaking up over the ocean? Is there any way that on a crash into the ocean, the flaps get knocked into a position that when they're found look like the flaps were placed down?
No, sir, that is absolutely not possible, physically not possible. No, it's not possible. You'll see, well, if you looked at the photographs and the depictions that I have in my book, you would see that the whole trailing edge of the right wing has compression forces along it that forced these pieces together, and it forced them together and left witness marks that could only be made if the flaps were in the down position. It's very definitive. Like it's, I said, it's not something that I just made up out of thin air. This is something that you look for on every single accident that you go to where there's wreckage. You go through the wreckage, you look for witness marks, and you reconstruct what was happening as the airplane was in its breakup sequence. And this particular airplane, it's easy to see that the flaps were dragged off the back of the wing. The flap pieces that broke off, the flapper on and the piece of flap that broke off, were dragged from the back of the wing because they were fighting through the water. That great big huge airplane was dragging them through the water when they were extended down, and they put tremendous force on them. You can also see where the right wingtip had to have dug into the water to cause the compression along the trailing edge of that wing that put those pieces together. And if you take two pieces and crash them together and squish them together in compression, then you can see where they were when they made that compression. It's relatively easy to see. And the nice thing about this particular case is that the evidence that I show in my book will let ordinary citizens see exactly what I'm talking about. This is no great big mystery that takes somebody like myself and my partners to figure it out. But it doesn't take that amount of experience to understand it once you see it. It's all there for the seeing.
We're speaking with Larry Vance. His book is MH370, Mystery Solved. Let me ask you this then, because a lot of the theories were a decompression situation, right? That everybody was knocked out, and that, you know, one of the, and I can't remember, I've interviewed several authors who crash investigators, David Soucy and another woman whose name I can't remember because now it's been a few years because it's been so long since this thing disappeared. And some of the theories at the time were that because we've had other planes that have lost pressure and you get this kind of euphoric feeling, you think you can control the plane, then suddenly you don't really know what you're doing or all the passengers get knocked out. Is there any possibility in your mind that something like that did happen, and maybe because I know that one of the people I've talked to in the past cited another plane where an incident like that happened, but one person was able to get oxygen in time to stay awake, to stay alive, and got to the controls of the plane, but then they couldn't do anything. And is there any possibility then that did happen, that there was some event that caused a decompressurization and everybody was knocked out, but somebody, maybe because hours later the plane got low enough, or is there any way that somebody in the end was in control, that it wasn't a pilot and on purpose, but somebody, maybe the pilot woke up, maybe another person was able to stay alive and got to the front of the plane and put those flaps down to try to land the plane as softly as possible with what possibilities they had left? Or is there no way that that's a possibility?
No, well, nobody else on the airplane except the pilot could fly the airplane. Nobody can just jump in the seat of a Boeing 777. First of all, they couldn't get in the cockpit, but second of all, even if they could, I mean, who could fly an airplane and put the flaps down and try and land it gently on the ocean? I mean, could you do it? I don't know many people who could do it except the pilot. As a matter of fact, it's not possible. No, what happened here was there was a decompression event. I can't prove that, but it fits with everything that's known from the evidence that we have, that the pilot, in fact, depressurized the airplane. That was part of the first event. Way back in the after the first half hour, when he turned the transponder off, it would make perfect sense from an evidence point of view that he would depressurize the airplane right at that time. Well, and of course, he has hours of oxygen available. He would put on his quick-don mask. He would say, okay, I'm fine. I'm going to depressurize the airplane. I'm going to eliminate everybody else on board. He would have already eliminated the other pilot by some method, which we can talk about if you want. But that would eliminate everybody else on board. Now he's on board the airplane by himself. It's the only one functioning. No, he just turns the pressurization back on and carries out the rest of his plan. This was well planned. This was a very well planned, well rehearsed event that took place. The pilot had an intention to do what he did, and he carried it out pretty much flawlessly. He kept the airplane from being discovered on radar. He took it down to the southern Indian Ocean. He made two mistakes. If you're looking at somebody who had the intention of making the airplane disappear, he made two mistakes. The first mistake was that he didn't realize that he couldn't turn off the connection between the engine and the satellite and the ground station, where the engine was sending information back as to its function, as it's programmed to do. That part of pilots don't know about those kind of things, and And if he didn't know about it, he didn't know how to turn it off. So there was a connection that they were able to find. These are called these pings and so on between the airplane and the ground station. They were able to use those to track the airplane and show that it went to the southern Indian Ocean. That was mistake number one on his part. He didn't know that was going to happen. He thought that he took the airplane to some place where nobody would even know which part of the world it was in. The second thing that happened to him was, during this ditching event, which he had planned out, he took it to an area where it was coming daylight, so he had daylight, he could see the surface of the ocean, he could try and land it in a controlled ditching. Nobody would think that if you ditched an airplane out there and kept it basically in one piece, that any part or piece of that airplane would ever show up. What happened to him is that he, on the controlled ditching phase of it, the surface conditions must have been such, waves and swells and so on, that the right wing tip dug into the water and put enough force on the back of the wing to cause these pieces, that force plus the force of the water as the flaps were being dragged through the water, knocked off these pieces of this flaperon and this piece of the right outboard flap. It also forced the rear of the right wing into the fuselage and made a hole into the fuselage. We know that because we see some pieces from inside the fuselage, from inside the cabin where the people were. We see a few small pieces from there that migrated out through that hole. Nothing else came out through that hole, or very little would have come out through that hole, because that's where the water was rushing in. But if it hadn't have been for the fact that these pieces came off, then you and I wouldn't be talking. We wouldn't know that he had put the flaps down for an intentional ditching. And we see the condition of this flaperon and that flap piece was such that we know that the airplane entered the water at slow speed, because otherwise those pieces would not exist. People said right from the beginning that this airplane ran out of fuel and did a high-speed dive into the ocean. I guarantee you that flaperon that we see and that flap section that we see would not even exist if that happened. The whole airplane would have entered the water in something like one-third of a second, and they would have been blown to smithereens. I saw that in Swiss Air 111 years ago. We had 2 million pieces of that airplane. It entered the water at a high speed, something over 300 knots, and we had 2 million pieces of airplane. There was no such thing as a flap section or anything that even resembled that. It was just little pieces, and this one would have been the same. But this one was low speed, and the flaperon and the flap section were drug off backwards. They didn't impact the wing in front of them. They were just left behind in the water, and they floated to Africa, and thank God that they did, because we had them to look at, and we know from the evidence on them that the flaps were down. Therefore, we know that the flaps were put down intentionally. We know that the engine had been running. We know that the airplane had electrics, because you can't get the flaps down without electrics and hydraulics. And we know that this was done intentionally by the pilot. And to me, that's mystery solved.
Larry Vance is the author of MH370 Mystery Solved. Larry, I have to do the news. Can you hang on for a couple more minutes for a couple more questions?
Sure, I will.
All right, excellent.
Absolutely.
Larry Vance, an investigator who's investigated over 200 flights that have crashed over the years. He's been awarded honors in Canada for his work. He says it's solved. The pilot put it down. We'll talk a little bit more about that after we take a quick check for the news. 4:31 in the morning. Let's get our headlines, Roger. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Make Sundays your official night out to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV. We're speaking with Larry Vance. He is the author of MH370, Mystery Solved. And the book is out now. You can buy it on Amazon. And Larry's with us for just a couple of more minutes to answer a couple more questions. Larry, you were very definitive in the last half hour. This is your conclusion. You believe this to absolutely be true, that the pilot intentionally took this plane down. The whole, I guess, from where we get to point A to point B, what you know is the flaps were down, somebody was controlling it. You believe that the pilot intentionally did this. How he got rid of, avoided any complications from the passengers on the plane or his co-pilot, and whether or not it was the pilot or co-pilot who did this, that you're a little less unsure of, correct?
That's correct, yeah. There's no definitive information to show which one did it, but one or the other of them did it. There's no reason to believe they did it together, so it had to be one or the other. Evidence points towards the captain, but I don't come to that conclusion in my book because there's nothing to show that definitively. Matt, I'd like to clear up just one little thing, if we have a second. You said in the introduction I was the investigator in charge of Swiss Air 111 investigation. I was the deputy investigator in charge. I just want to make that clear so that nobody can say that I said otherwise.
Sure, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You mentioned that the pilot or co-pilot, whoever was in control, could have depressurized the plane and then repressurized it when they wanted. Is that as simple as a flip of a switch for the pilot to control that?
Yeah, you can depressurize it. It's not one switch, but it can be done very easily. What you do is you shut the inflow of air off to the cabin, and then you open the outflow valves. It takes a few seconds, but no more than that. So that's a very easy thing to do. And then to get the airplane repressurized, you just go the other way. You turn close the outflow valves and turn the air back on and pressurize the airplane back up again. By then, everybody else would have been eliminated in the airplane. So that's no doubt how it was done. And, you know, people say, well, were the passengers still alive at the end of the flight? Well, after that amount of time, No, they were not. In my opinion, they were not. No.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, you said that nobody else could have, you know, that had to be the pilot that did this. Other people couldn't do it. You undoubtedly have heard the story now about what happened at Seattle-Tacoma Airport Friday night, that a ground worker basically stole an airplane, took off in it, did barrel rolls and crazy maneuvers, and then crashed the plane on purpose. And we don't know anything about this person as of yet. Maybe they had military experience. Maybe they flew planes in the past, and that hasn't gotten out there yet. But there's an instance of somebody just stealing an airplane. Do you think it's impossible, though, that it was anybody else except for the pilot in control of this plane?
In my opinion, it is, for MH370, that would be impossible. There was, first of all, they checked out, according to the official investigation, they checked out everybody else on the airplane. Nobody had any flying experience. I can see how the thing in Seattle could happen, to tell you the truth, but there's no way that there's any equivalency to what happened in MH370. To take that airplane and fly it to fly it intentionally on the route that airplane was flown, and then to fly it down to the southern Indian Ocean, and then to put the flaps down and land it where they did. No, that's a pilot doing that with absolute assurance. That was a pilot that did that.
So, Larry, I know you're just dealing in what you see as the facts, because there is this piece of plane, because the flap was down. That tells you somebody was in control, somebody did this on purpose, etc. But do you stop as you're coming up with your theory on this and say, but why in the world do you do all this and then fly it for that long and then try to land it on the ocean? Because that pilot then is going to die a horrific death. There's one thing to crash it at 500 miles an hour where it's going to be an instantaneous finish. But if he pulled off what you're saying he did, then that plane sunk in the ocean and he drowned to death, probably, if he survived the landing, which we're assuming he would have.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And see, that is it speaks to me. What that says is that this was all done intentionally to make the airplane disappear. Like, if somebody wanted to just commit suicide, if you will, then they could do it like the guy in Seattle apparently just did, and they could do it like the Germanwings pilot did, just take it at 500 miles an hour and crash it straight down. That would not make the airplane disappear. That's why we can say with pretty high confidence that this guy wanted to the airplane to disappear. It surely looks like he wanted it to disappear so that nobody would know that he was a part of it, that it was his intention to do it. He wanted to be, obviously the guy knew he was going to be dead. He either had to do that because it was his intention to commit suicide, or he did it because he had some motivation other than pure suicide to make it happen. He wanted to make some kind of a statement, but he didn't want people to know that he was the one who did it. I don't have a background in criminal investigations and human factors kind of stuff that would say that I'm the guy to solve that part of it.
Sure.
What I know is that he did it. Why he did it? I think it's very important for experts to recognize and be solid in the fact that he did it. Because you can't come up with a solid motivation for why he did it doesn't mean that he didn't do it. I mean, those two things don't fit together to me. And I have had many people say to me, well, there's no, and even the official investigation said this. They said, well, we can't find any reason why he would do that, so therefore he didn't do it. Well, I mean, does that make any sense to you? No.
Well, but in the official investigation, are they saying he didn't do it, or they're saying we can't say that he did it? We can't say anything.
They can't, no. What they're saying with the official investigation, the report was just released a couple weeks ago, and they're saying that it was done, that things were done intentionally, or things were done by a pilot. But it could, there could have been some involvement by a third party. It could have been some kind of a hijacking, or he was forced to do it, and this sort of thing. Well, again, it's hard to explain all the evidence that's in my book and in a few words of conversation. But the fact is that doesn't make any sense either. That there could be hijackers who could get into the cockpit and do what and force what happened to that airplane in something less than 2 minutes to get into the cockpit and make all this stuff happen and all the follow-on events. It doesn't make any sense. It had to have been somebody already in the cockpit who already had control of the airplane, and that's really the only thing that makes that makes any sense and allows the evidence that we have to all come together to show us what happened. It all fits very nicely.
Larry, last question, because I've got to let you go here in a moment. I got to get caught up. But do you think, I know you feel that you've figured out this is exactly what happened. Are we ever going to find this plane? Will they ever have the black boxes? Will this ever be able to be truly confirmed by more evidence, by more of the plane? Where do you think this is headed?
Well, if nobody's looking for it, they're not going to find it. I don't know whether they'll have more searches come up. I suppose one day it will be found. I don't know whether I'll still be alive, but one day it'll be found. I know there's some people who want this search reopened because they think they know where the airplane is. I'm not sure. I would say that someday it'll be found, but it'll be a long time from now when they have better technology than they have today for looking for it.
If they do find it, say in the next year or two, is there any possibility they can still get information from those black boxes? Or now that they've been underwater that long, are those going to be ruined?
Oh no, they should be serviceable because they weren't beat up when the airplane entered the water. When they find it, it's going to confirm exactly, or if they find it, it will confirm exactly what I said in my book. I think that we're fortunate that we don't have to find the airplane in order to have confidence that we know what happened. I would like for you to read my book and after you do that, call me back and we can talk about the evidence as I've tried to describe in words. That would be a lot of fun. I'd like to do that.
That sounds good, Larry. We will do that. The book is MH370 Mystery Solved by Larry Vance. You can pick it up on Amazon. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Real nice talking to you, sir.
You too, sir. All right, Larry Vance, we will check in with him again. We'll get a copy of the book, and we will look into it. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN.